divided into varieties by her threefold modes, material nature creates the forms of the living entities, and the living entities, seeing this, are illusioned by the knowledge covering the feature of the illusory energy. Okay, so this is interesting. Let's look at the perspective here. We just started the chapter, and it starts, "The personality of Godhead," Kapila continued, "My dear Mother, now I shall describe unto you the different categories of the Absolute Truth, knowing which any person can be released from the influence of the modes of material nature." The Supreme Personality of Godhead is, he has no, he is, he is, he is, he is, he is, by his. So the second verse, he's going to describe the categories of the Absolute, and he starts off describing all of the qualifications of the Supreme Person, of the Paramatma. Paramatma. He's the greatest, he's the most handsome, he's all-powerful, he does this, everything else. You know. Pretty much Paramatma and maybe Mahavishnu. As his pastime, Mahavishnu, he accepts the subtle material energy. We've noticed many prayers will start off like this. They start off glorifying the demigods or Brahma or the rishis and the priests. They'll start off glorifying how Krishna is transcendental, the material nature. Okay. And the first thing they want to talk about. Not very high in some ways in terms of Lord Chaitanya's gift, but pretty high. Get us out of this material world. Get us out of the fog. So start off describing he's transcendental, but as his pastime, he accepts the material world. Then yesterday's verse, divided by her threefold modes, material nature creates the forms of the living entities. Living entities, seeing this, are illusioned by the knowledge covering feature. That's today. Okay. Divided, so he accepts the material nature. And what happens? Material nature is divided by her modes. So the modes are him, right? The three modes are the creative mode, the peaceful mode, maintenance mode, and then this destructive mode. So she's being creative, she's contemplating, and then she's destroying. But that is time. Time means three things: creation, maintenance, and destruction. And time is the external manifestation of the Paramatma. And the Paramatma is expansion of Mahavishnu. So it's about cosmology. And knowing this means, of course, maybe tatvataha. Because our knowledge, our epistemology, you can't live without an epistemology. So our epistemology pretty much is science, like rational empiricism. We have some kind of observation. I see it. And show me. Let me see that. I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying, but it's a sound argument. So we have to come to see things. We train how to experience things visually. And this is a whole subconscious training process. Again, we mentioned many times in cultural anthropology, different communities of Chinese people, Japanese people, Hopi Indians, industrialized people. They have a different way of organizing their sensuous experience, organizing and seeing, So we experience the world by seeing it, and already there was an application of some logic how it's organized, how we're perceiving it. And then we, space by space, but then we apply, you know, we learn how to apply different kinds of logic, grammar, subject, object, subject, verb, object, adjectives, adverbs, prepositional phrases. So we talk, and we, you know, the cars are going by my house. You know, the man is driving the car. And so, of course, time is enters into the verb. Things and verbs. Yeah. So we have this experience. So the modes of nature are agitating, the prakriti agitated by the modes of nature produces the forms of living entities. And living entities, when we see this, you know, oh, there is lunch. Oh, there is my car. You know, oh, there is my bank. Because what is it? That our knowledge feature is covered. So Prabhupada has a purport about this. Okay. Material energy has the power to cover knowledge. Material energy has the power to cover knowledge. It's called spiritual knowledge. You know? But this covering cannot be applied to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is applicable only to the prajaha, or those who are born from material with material bodies, the conditioned souls. So that's pretty much a theme that Prabhupada is going to hang on to here. It's not really mentioned so much in the text or in the verses so far. No? But well, why is Prabhupada doing this? And of course, most likely Prabhupada's following the acharyas in this. Yeah. And so not something where he's deciding to make a real strategic decision in terms of, you know, the modern world. But because, I would wonder if these verses are very, very much subjected to commentary by the Mayavadis, by Anishwara Kapila. Anishwara Kapila, the Britannica says, appeared like 50 B.C., and he had some followers. He was a popular guy, Albert Einstein of his day, or something. You know, he was bigger than that. And so he had, it was like in the second century A.D. or something that Ishwara Krishnadas wrote the Sankhya Charika, which then is the like a summary or presentation of kind of like Euclid. Euclid just took stuff previously, you know. So the Sankhya was really presented by him. And as far as I know, he's the main acharya for Sankhya view of reality. And it comes on down, you know. And I think the last major kind of famous book that dealt with this is maybe like 1970s or something. One person I got a copy of, I was trying to work on this area. And he goes through and looks at it and kind of like just looking at it historically where it is and begins to look at the philosophy a little bit of it. I wasn't able to read the whole thing. But still the philosophy is there embedded like in modern science in so many ways. We're so much, what's the word, monotheistic, our culture. It's hard to actually realize different philosophies and so on. But if you start going out a little bit and other people who are more advanced than we are and doing more sankirtan, I'm sure they're going to appreciate this. You need so many kinds of people, you know, with so many kinds of philosophies. You know? So this is one group of people who believe that the material nature covers the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah? And that's directly seen people stating this. You know? That when God becomes involved in the material nature, he becomes covered, whoever is God. Yeah. Okay. The different kinds of living entities vary according to the modes of material nature. Yeah. The different kinds of living entities vary according to the modes of material nature. Different kinds of living entities vary according to the modes of material nature. So modes of material nature emphasized here. So on the right-hand side, we get a picture, and it's dogs of the world. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rows by 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 columns. 9 times 6 is 54. They got 54 different kinds of dogs of the world. Can you find St. Bernards? Are there St. Bernards here? I'm scanning. I don't see any St. Bernards. I see very, very lower right is a German Shepherd. But just this one little thing of dog species, you know, maybe there's, I don't know how many are recognized now, like different breeding strains, and that's coming from, like, you know, which are the most primordial strains and things like that. I'm having trouble with my phone at any moment. It might cause problems. So if I go off for a couple of seconds, I should be able to reload it, you know, this stuff. You know. So this is it. But it explains this is happening by the modes of material nature. I have this fantasy of being in a class and thought about asking, are there any questions, you know. And I feel a trepidation that, you know, Prabhupada's going to blast me for having a stupid question, you know. Or else my other godbrothers or people in the audience are going to, like, you know, become angry at me for asking a certain question. I have my ego, kind of ego. But one of the questions I'd like to ask, Prabhupada, because it seems to me, we said that all these different things, Pomeranians, Schnauzers, what do you call them, Weimaraners, you know, they're all Alsatian Lorraine, Dachshunds, Basset Hounds, Bloodhound, beagles. Wow, I know a lot of dogs here. Yeah, greyhounds. Yeah, they're all being. These are all reflections of something which exists in the spiritual world. So the three modes of material nature create this. But as far as I know, the three modes of material nature create the reality of the thing. You know. The real table is in the spiritual world. You know, the real chairs in the spiritual world. Many times when I was crossing from Berkeley over to San Francisco, especially in the evening, when you're going over the Bay Bridge, you know, it used to be there, you look over at San Francisco and you see the skyline and stuff. And it was really quite impressive, beautiful next to the ocean. And it gave you a strong sense of what, like, Dwarka, you know, must be like. You know? And you know, in the background, you're feeling the character of San Francisco, and it has this high cultured aspect to it, and an incredible opulence, you know, opulence, and kind of packed into a manageable size there. So I was thinking, well, is that what it is? Is it like a perverted reflection of Dwarka? So the mode of goodness, the reflection is accurate, but it's a reflection. The mode of passion is distorted by our desire, and we're hankering. And the mode of ignorance is just the exact opposite of whatever is there. So power, more love in the material world is the most abominable thing, but in the spiritual world is the most elevated thing. That's our thought, that the modes of nature being, lend the reality, make it real in a material sense. And it has a time, and it has these kind of things, and we can hanker for it or we can lament over it. But the actual details are coming about because there's some kind of variegatedness in the spiritual world. And the first question. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.2, it is very nicely explained that although the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance are born of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is not subjected to them. So same theme, huh? We have to hear this a lot. In other words, the energy emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot act on Him. It acts on the conditioned souls we are covered by the material energy. And 7.12 is, Yechaiva sattvika bhava rajas rajasas tamasah jaye mata eveti tandibhi na tvam aham peshute mai naham natvaham peshute mai. Knowing that all states of being, be they goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. this is in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna finishes off by saying the best yoga is bhakti yoga. Yoginam api sarandesham. And in chapter 7, he says, hey, okay, now I'll tell you how to do that yoga. And he gives some real good ideas, you know, about what is the living entity, what is material nature, bhumirapo nalobhubayu, like that. And yoga means to link up. But then he's pointing out that I'm not a part of this whole thing, which I'm describing to you. The Lord is the Father of all living entities, you know, because he impregnates the material nature with the conditioned souls. The Lord is the Father of all living entities because he impregnates material nature with the conditioned souls. Therefore, the conditioned souls get bodies created by the material energy. Therefore, the conditioned souls get bodies, yeah, created by the material energy. Whereas the Father of the living entities is aloof from the modes. Yeah. So, repetition, same thing again and again. But many times it seems the Prabhupada's perspective is he's talking about things and looking at things with some sense of reality. He talks about the living entities are in different forms. The living entities are different. Yeah. Well, they're not different. but they are different. So he's talking about it from the point of view of somebody who's actually involved in all this. Here we see somebody tossing out seeds and being independent. It is stated in the previous verse that the material energy was accepted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order that he might exhibit pastimes for the living entities who wanted to enjoy and lorded over material energy. This world was created through the material energy of the Lord for the so-called enjoyment of living entities. Why this material world was created for the sufferings of the conditioned soul is a very intricate question for the origin of the jiva. Intricate question. There is a hint in the previous verse in the word lilaya, which means for the pastimes of the Lord. We have pastimes of the jiva, not pastimes of the Lord. The Lord wants to rectify the enjoying temperament of the conditioned souls. So it's his lila. He's not forced to do it. He just say, yeah, go, depart thou to eternal damnation, O accursed living being. Yeah. Yeah. Depart thou to eternal damnation, O accursed living being. That's a one Christian tract shows Jehovah doing that. The other one says, depart thou to eternal happiness, O blessed one. Go to hell. Go to heaven. Go to hell. Go to heaven. Go to heaven. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to hell. Go to heaven. I mentioned it many times. I wish I could find it. It's a really interesting tract. The things you find under your windshield wipers. And it shows God sitting there at like maybe like, you know, 40 feet tall on a park bench with a totally plain looking robe. You know, and in front of him is a line of all the guys who just died, the size of peanuts, and the angels are keeping everybody in line, probably with some kind of cattle prods or something, you know, and they're the size of carrots, and God is the size of a human being like that, you know, and God doesn't have a face; he has a white light, and out of the white light, his speech bubble comes. That's all he does. Go to hell. Go to heaven. Go to heaven. Go to hell. There's not even any purgatory in that one. I guess it's a little difficult because it's, you know, it's a cartoon. Yeah. So it's very interesting. That's the conception, their philosophy. It's theistic. But all God does is just sit there. And we're mentioning maybe about noontime the whistle blows and then everybody kind of, you know, sits down and whatever. And, you know, God looks in his lunchbox to see what Mrs. God packed there. Like, you know, maybe a plastic container full of, pre-made, pudding. Maybe a couple of them, he likes them. maybe a peanut butter and jelly sandwich made of Welch's jelly and Skippy peanut butter, creamy peanut butter on Wonder Bread. Maybe a little bit old, a bit dried. Again, this is a God not that responsible, you know, has your hair and curlers. But it's really bizarre in a view of heaven, you know. And then he kind of washes the whole thing down, maybe with some coffee out of his thermos, you know, and has to watch his ulcer. And he talks it over with the living entities a little bit, you know, and with his angels a little bit, eating their lunch boxes. And they kind of, what I guess, kind of, you know, they rinse their mouth out and, you know, go back to work, you know. Go to hell, go to heaven, heaven, go to hell. So, okay, yeah. But it says that he created it for his pastime. This is intricate. And compassion, does the material nature inspire compassion? Is it kind of like a joking thing with Krishna? He's, you know, the living entities eternally have this possibility of exercising their free will. And, of course, we're one of the guys who believe that actually came from a relationship with Krishna. Some of us, why not? Could have come from a relationship with Krishna. We decided to come here. Okay. The Lord wants to rectify. He wants to rectify the enjoying temperament of the conditioned souls. Yeah. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that no one is the enjoyer but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhoktaram Nyagatapa Syam. This material energy is created, therefore, for anyone who pretends to enjoy. Okay. A little bit of discussion of this point. An example can be cited here, that there is no necessity for the government's creation. This is interesting because we're preaching to somebody. We're going through this right now and we're using Prabhupada's philosophy, culture, works, talking about it. And in our preaching process, right here, we can include this example, which is a very common example. There is no necessity for the government's creation of a separate police department, but because it is a fact that some of the citizens will not accept the state laws, a department to deal with criminals is necessary. There is no necessity, but at the same time, there is. So we got a nice picture of Alcatraz here. Very, very famous. Maybe the most famous prisons. It's on this island in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. The background there, it doesn't look like it's so much in the daytime. But at nighttime, you can see the Bay Bridge across on the left. That's where you see it going across. You see Alcatraz out there, Treasure Island. But at nighttime, it's all lit up and stuff, and it's really beautiful. Yeah. Like, you know, all the yadus and different palaces. And, of course, then there's, like, the cell blocks. And you just like, you know, boy, just one next to the other. One above the other, one above the other. Yeah. And it looks like the guard's about to open the doors there on this block, and then all the prisoners will go back inside, and then there's somebody up there, some criminal, and he's got his criminal designation, his number, 28527. Of course, maybe I told you the whole story about the devotee who was the night watchman all by himself. He was in charge of the place. Yeah. So that's material nature. It's one little part of the whole world, the whole San Francisco Bay Area. And there's you get across the River Mirage to get there. And most people don't go there and don't even know what's going on there. And of course, it's created, like Prabhupada says, to isolate people who have this temporary insanity. But of course, the idea is that is reform, you know, reformatory, a place to penitentiary. You know, you can become penitent and become reformed. And back into the other thing like that. Of course, the idea is, well, why did Krishna create this possibility of rebellion? Yeah. And of course, that means that maybe somehow or other it's integrated. Actually, from Krishna's point of view, it fits into the whole thing like a little bit of pepper in the chutney. We have chutney, but we've had tossed a little bit of pepper into it. Ah, not too much, and it makes the whole chutney spicy. So from Krishna's point of view, it's actually kind of a necessary part. They're very subtle, very difficult to understand. Similarly, there was no necessity to create this material world for the sufferings of the conditioned souls. But at the same time, there are certain living entities known as Nitya Bhagha, who are eternally conditioned. We say that they have been conditioned from time immemorial because no one can trace out when the living entity, the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, became rebellious against the supremacy of the Lord. Okay. What happened? Nitya Bhagha doesn't mean a class of people who God created just to suffer in the material world. I told you Bertrand Russell has a thing about God was listening to all the angels singing and glorifying him. And he said, but why shouldn't they? Because he made them eternally happy and they couldn't experience anything else but happiness. You know? So he's a little bored, you know. So then out of the void, God created the earth, and he created living beings who were suffering, cavemen, but they built altars out of rocks and different things, and they worshiped him, you know, offering whatever. You know? But they suffered. And then they killed each other and sacrificed each other to God and sang his praises. And they developed, bows and arrows and shot each other and suffered. Then they did bad things and got diseases and suffered. But still they worshiped God and bowed down before him. And finally created all this advanced civilization, advanced techniques of torturing each other and killing each other and everything else. But still they worshiped God and bowed down to him. Then out of the void, God sent a second planet and hit the earth and killed everybody and destroyed everybody. Then God turned to the angels and said, that was fun. Let's do it again. That was fun. Let's do it again. That was Bertrand Russell's. But it gives perspective. Better to have a wise man for an enemy than a fool for a friend. You know? So why not? If God enjoys it. Yeah. It has some perspective on this whole thing. So we're discussing it here. Probably talking about it. Rebellious against the supremacy of the Lord. It is the fact that there are two classes of men, those who are obedient to the laws of the Supreme Lord, and those who are atheistic or agnostic. Yeah. Atheistic means you're opposed to God, and agnostic means you can't know. Some are agnostic, say, I don't know. Other ones say, you can't know. They say that. Maimonides, he wrote a book called Guide for the Perplexed. That's what it was. Yeah. Now maybe like 17th, 18th century or something, 19th century. And he said, not only is God impersonal, God must be impersonal. Yeah. We can see his footprints, these kind of things, but we can never catch up with him. So he's kind of like them. What would you call like Hiranyagarbha? Hiranyagarbha view. Yeah. Paramatma, probably a lot of Jewish, Ron something told me this is very common amongst Jewish culture. You know, other people can comment on it. That philosophically, that God's a person, yeah, but you're not going to quite catch up with him. Another Jewish scholar told me that, yeah, we believe the soul is different than the body, but it's like a styrofoam cup when you have your coffee. You finish it off, and there's always a few little beads of the coffee sticking to it. So the same way, the soul is different than the body, but there's a little bit sticking to it, so you don't get rid of it. At the time of death, at the time of destruction of the universe, that little bit of coffee gets resurrected and something somehow or other becomes spiritualized. Very distinct philosophies, even amongst the theological people. Yeah? Who are atheistic or agnostic, who do not accept the existence of God, and who want to create their own laws. They want to establish that everyone can create his own laws or his own religious path. Without tracing out the beginning of the existence of these two classes, okay, we're not going to do this. We can take it for granted that some of the living entities revolted against the laws of the Lord. Such entities are called conditioned souls. So they are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. Therefore, the words gunayir vichitraha are used here. In this material world, there are 8,400,000 species of life. As spirit souls, they are all transcendental to the material world. Why then do they exhibit themselves in different stages of life? The answer is given here. They are under the spell of the three modes of material nature. Because they were created by the material energy, their bodies are made of material elements. So it's saying that we have some inclination, some childish, weak, limpid desire to enjoy like this or that or something. You know? But it's not sufficient to make the thing work. So Krishna then gives us the inspiration, material inspiration, to really get into it and try it out. And then the material nature comes along and stimulates our little desire to make it bigger, make it grow, make it manifest. And then we can get it out the same way. Of course, a surgeon may lance a boil. It's pushing towards the surface. It's stretching the skin. It's causing pain. He comes along, has a hold. It's okay, hang on. And it runs a sharp scalpel right into it. And then grabs both sides, four fingers, and squeezes the pus out. You see it coming right out. Then he goes with a little swab, maybe, and just, goes right in and swabs the thing out and packs it with some, what's it called, some gauze, very fine gauze like that, so an abscess won't create, and keeps the top open. The body, closes around it really well. A little later, we'll go back on, he moistens it and just pulls the gauze out. Maybe part of the time it is big, but no abscess forms like that. So this is maybe the material world, lancing a boil. Getting it to come to the surface, stimulating us to get it out. Covered by the material body, the spiritual identity is lost. Covered by the material body, the spiritual identity is lost. And therefore the word mamuhe, is used here, indicating that they have forgotten their own spiritual identity. So on the right we have a picture here of an old lady, old lady body. Maybe some of our audience have one of these rascals, you know. Yeah. And now, looking back at maybe at her picture of herself when she was a little child, and the whole thing is forgotten, our spiritual identity. You know? And looking at all this thing in a kind of a perplexed fashion. My goodness, what is this? What is this? You know? Yeah. So everybody, you know, old lady body, old granny. Granny can be the greatest philosopher. Looking at this, a little bit of push. From the spiritual nature, if her karma is finished, if she's got like enough of it done, where she's like looking, and like Devahuti says, I'm tired, I'm sick of all this stimulation by material nature. So maybe we have one way is to go through it for a long time or something before we actually get sick of it. Then we begin to wonder, and then Krishna keeps offering stuff. Well, we're still not quite ready, a little more, but now I'm going to offer you some more when you're half awake. Yeah. This forgetfulness of spiritual identity is present in the jivas or souls who are conditioned, being subject to be covered by the energy of material nature. Jnana guhaya is another word used. Guha means covering. Guha sounds like glue. Because the knowledge of the minute conditioned souls is covered. The knowledge. They are exhibited in so many species of life. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th chapter, 1st canto, the living entities are illusioned by the material energy. Material energy. In the Vedas, also, illusioned by the material energy. In the Vedas also, it is stated that the eternal living entities are covered by different modes, and that they are called tree-colored, red, white, and blue, like America, huh? Red, white, and blue, living entities, So, material nature, three modes, covered, spiritual identity, subjective. So we have knowledge. And what is our knowledge? Jivara Swarupa. Krishna Nitya Das. When we have that knowledge, you know, then we act in a certain fashion. That knowledge is covered. Red is a representation of the mode of passion. White is a representation of the mode of goodness. And blue is a representation of the mode of ignorance. These modes of material nature belong to the material energy. These modes of material nature belong to the material energy. And therefore, living entities under these different modes of material nature have different kinds of material bodies because they are forgetful of their spiritual identities. And they think the material body to be themselves. To the conditioned soul, me means the material body. Me is the objective, right? I say, give it to me. I say, give it to me. Conditioned soul, me, means the material body. This is called moha, or bewilderment. It is repeatedly said in the Katha Upanishad that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never affected by the influence of material nature. It is rather the conditioned souls, or the minute infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, who are affected by the influence of material nature and will appear in different bodies under the different modes. So one theme, right? Prabhupada took the entire purport to discuss this one theme already on the third canto, which is one of Krishna's legs. But we're not up to the point of, you might say, I haven't come to kissing his hand yet. So we're so ashamed where our heads down in the dust in front of him, asking for apologies, Sambandha. And the little Abhideya, maybe now we're coming to the point where we can just start to like raise our head up and see his feet and, you know, see his legs like that and so on. You know? A little bit off the ground. Yeah? A person, stimulation, he's a person. He's got legs. He's standing up. We're sitting down. Yeah? Yeah? We've fallen down. Yeah? So third canto. So it's not very advanced in that sense in terms of the possibilities Lord Chaitanya is giving. That's our, I think that's our, I see in the purport, I think, yeah. So, koi prashna hai? Qualquer pregunta hai?
And I think that's for English audience questions. So.
Maharaj, you are a party pooper. You have reduced the party of living in the material world, you've reduced it to a boil. You've reduced the whole thing to a boil.
Or evacuating a turd, if you want to guess that also.
Kim atyam kamahaitukam. That's a conclusion in Bhagavad Gita. Is it, we can't figure out, you know, we don't think it's real. We don't think there's any substance to it. We don't think that there's anybody in control. There's no purpose behind it. Therefore, let's enjoy. But you have destroyed it, making it just simply a boil. A zit.
You mean you want to enjoy your boil?
Well, I think so. Somehow I'm pretty sick.
You can squeeze it a little bit and not squeeze it and squeeze it a little bit and not squeeze it and, you know. Have somebody else squeeze your boil, and you'll squeeze their boil.
You know, it's a great, great perspective. I liked your use of Alcatraz. What is it about Alcatraz that makes it so difficult to escape? Is it the currents, the sharks? What is it about?
Well, nobody.
I know there's something to it.
Nobody escapes from Alcatraz now because it's closed.
Right.
Yeah. I think what they always had to haul the water in, had to haul the food in, so they just moved it right across the bay to San Quentin. Like that. Yeah. The currents were terrible. And it was like, I guess there's kind of like no way you were going to swim ashore. Once you got in the water, you'd be maybe carried out through the Golden Gate Bridge or something, or caught in swirls around the island. And other than that, yeah, it was just the fact it's surrounded by water. And so, you know, what, how are you going to get out? As far as I know, there was only one person or something ever escaped from there, or something like that. You know, how he got off and everything else is a real question. But that was it. It was just an island, so the water was surrounding it, and the currents were very strong like that.
Yeah. So it's sort of similar. We can't escape from here. It's very, very similar. And there's even there's that Viroja River at the end. If somehow we could get to the, we could get way up past past Svargaloka and the planets of the sages and Brahmaloka, there's water. There's the Viroja River.
Yeah, there weren't any sharks, as far as I know, in the bay. Everybody happy? Everybody's convinced that God doesn't... the thing is that one thing is hearing it again and again. So it stimulates our subtle existence, you know, and wakes it up. And then we deal with material nature. When I go through these purports like this and, you know, make up these PowerPoint shows, this is the way my mind works. My mind works in images and stuff, so thinking which image to put in and stuff. And for me, it's a very stimulating process. And once a week I do the PowerPoint show for this class. Every Wednesday we have a Bhakti Shastri workshop. Every Saturday morning we have a Bhagavatam workshop. And we're trying to work out now, you know, what's the best way to do it systematically. We're engaged in a whole, you know, effort to integrate the temple management with intellectual guys and stuff. Have a combination between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas and ISKCON and work out for the Ministry of Education. So one thing we're pointing out is we're doing again and again, actually sometimes we have our Bhakti Shastri workshop. I'll just take this chapter, or I'll take the chapter we're studying in the Saturday morning class. Sometimes we do a chapter a week. And go through and look at the verses that Prabhupada quotes. And that's a wonderful Bhakti Shastri class. Because you can see the ones that he quotes and stuff, and how they're being used, which part's being used. And then look them up. And it makes a very, very excellent way to look at the Gita, other books like that, because you're looking at it the way the acharyas look at it. So more and more I'm developing this habit of just taking the time to look it up, try and chant it. And I can see, you know, it's reinforcing and stimulating me to memorize those verses that occur more often. And take it to heart. You know, next lifetime, we'll be Brahmins, born into a certain community. You know. Is it useful for us, our service? Is it useful for our sankirtan? And for us, yeah, we see, I think most people are just vikarmis in the modern world. Mostly, for the large part, just vikarmis, any old damn thing to gratify the senses. That's the philosophy being promulgated by American culture. But as we're trying to do our preaching programs, we're getting involved in this thing with art and the sacred. And right now, we'll take off next Tuesday. We'll take off to go to India. And already, we're lining up. We're going to have, what do you call it, Sunday night, we'll meet with Kalyan Kumar Chakrabarty, who was director of the National Fine Arts Academy of India, director of all primary education in Madhya Pradesh, you know, very erudite person, a doctorate in museum management from Harvard, paid for by the government of India, went there and did it. So very educated person. But what is his actual level of development? What is his concern? What is his idea? What is his focus? You know? In so many ways, we're just in awe of his intelligence and his perspective of how things are happening on a certain level. You know? And he says that art and the sacred, that not only should you have like the process and the situation, but you should have the example of some people who've actually achieved the goal, you know, who've achieved the success, reached the sacred by art. And he says some people who come to mind are Jesus Christ, Buddha, and somebody's clicking their microphone there. My God, yeah. Jesus Christ, Buddha, and Prabhupada. They said that. You know? So Prabhupada, that people know, they don't say Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami, they know, they call him Prabhupada. And appreciation that he seems to have reached that goal. You know? But am I in a position? So this is India. India, the land of philosophy and culture. You know? And their ideas spreading everywhere. You know? I mean, through so many formats, their ideas are going out and people are appreciating, ah, yeah, this is better, this is higher. So, on the other hand, we have what we call a dikarmis. And then that's basically it's about it. That's the material ambience. Different communities, they maintain these ideas. Different cultures, they maintain themselves against this industrialization. There are communities, by Krishna's mercy, Hopi Indians, different tribal groups, you know, fought it. You know? But for the large part, very strong idea of what's it called, dikarma, is a way to become happy. And music, art, drama, culture, poetry, expand this all over the world, with billions of dollars being invested into the industry for this idea. So, but behind that, there are theists. This is the age of Kali. Yeah. And so some people, because of St. Francis of Assisi or Prophet Muhammad, Jesus Christ, probably said they both did such good work. You know, I heard from Prabhupada's lips, he said that Jesus Christ did such good work, you know, like that. Muhammad, too. It was a very, very difficult situation. So he did this. He injected a theistic background. So you're not going to do it by becoming, generally speaking, going from becoming a Vikarmi to a Karmi, and a Karmi to a Jnani, a Jnani to a Vimukti Jnani, to a mystic yogi, and finally to realizing the Paramatma and surrendering to him. But going to be a sublime process where the Prophet Muhammad comes along and you get a love injection from God. little Richard said that. You don't need no heroin. You don't need no speed. You just need a love injection from God. Okay. So Prophet Muhammad on bass, you know, Jesus Christ on lead guitar, and I don't know, the Prabhupada. So Prophet on the big mudanga. Hey, let's do it. There's an analogy. Yeah, Prophet Muhammad, I knew I'm on bass drum, the bass guitar we have. Prophet Muhammad, his name be blessed. Okay, blah, blah. And on lead guitar, Jesus Christ. That's what the Mohammedan say. According to the Quran, at the ultimate battle between good and evil, it won't be Muhammad who leads the forces of good, it will be Jesus Christ. Yeah, Jesus Christ will lead the forces of good against the forces of evil. And again, maybe the Hare Krishna's on the big mridanga. Oh, what a band. And we'll see on the other side, the battle of the band, we have the dark one, Lucifer, with Beelzebub on something, you know, different instruments. Okay, the sky is starting to fall, having some rainfall here. Yeah. So that, what do you call it, sublime process, going from dikarmi to getting a taste of transcendence. Yeah. And in that taste, then, with that perspective, you can build a little narrow, skinny, maybe elevator of karma, vikarma, jnana, vimukti jnana, that kind of stuff, you know, to try and drag ourselves out of this in more and more, what do you call it, purified fashion. Kapila's teaching Sankhya to Devahuti, but as I remember, again, in the very strong in our mind, in the end, he says, after doing all this, and she glorifies him a few verses at the end of the whole thing, kind of gives her summary, glorifies the whole thing. Nice to look at those, huh? And he says, yes, it's all true, exactly what you're saying, you caught it. He said, but Bamini, hey, I'm just your little boy, you know, talking some philosophy, we're talking about these things. To try and pass the afternoon. So he's telling her, that's the real thing, is, hey, you know, this is our relationship, and I love you, you're my mommy, and I'm you know, and I'm your cuppy, she calls him. But Devahuti calls, you know, Kapila around the house, you know, cuppy, you know, yeah. But don't, keep the Sankhya in the background. It's not worth that much, but it's worth something. Because otherwise you'll start to think of me as our relationship is material and we won't get the real benefit. So right now we need some Sankhya, you know, to keep our relationship going and developing. And when he leaves her, she has this tremendous separation, tremendous. She's calling and falling on the ground, crying, and all the maidservants and everything else are probably merging in her ocean of grief like that, you know. And so it's very interesting to look at the whole story. Sankhya fits in, but, and it's for some of us who have this particular kind of nature, need this, all of us to some degree, you know. But who can we preach to? Yeah, we have a certain nature preaching to certain people. Who is Krishna sending? Yeah. But in general, in terms of strategy, whatever. I was just gravitated to the Bhaktivedanta Institute without any problem. But then I went right through it because it sticks with material physical sciences. And my nature is more like this cultural anthropology. Yeah. Other people, boy, they just book distribution. And they can express it in so many ways that sometimes they're not even like very good at expressing it in terms of like, you know, good philosophical basis. But they have a strong taste in book distribution. They want to go out, they want to win the Christmas marathon, you know, partly for material reasons, but partly because, you know, they get this internal taste. It's unbelievable. They see Lord Nityananda. I have one disciple, Yambavati. I did her biography, and hired a professional actress, director, and she wrote it down and stuff, and they did it, and it was incredible. The actress was just getting carried away. It's an audio book. You can try and distribute it if anybody wants copies. This is incredible here in her life. These book distributors, you know, to me, they live in a different world. It's that, you know, she had to win the Christmas marathon in Lima. She was coughing up blood, literally, coughing up blood, racked, body racked. So finally, her girlfriends, the Brahmacharinis, said, well, just spend one day back in Shosika out of the city and rest like that. She said, okay, I'll do that one day. They locked the door and wouldn't let her out. They were pushing Prasadam under the door. And she was complaining and howling, and they were laughing and everything else and stuff. And finally, she figured out how she could stack boxes up on the toilet and climb out the window and fall down, you know, on her head and run back to the war camp and get back into it. And I think she won like that. So you read the book and hear about it, and it's, wow, these are people have a different taste. She doesn't have any calluses left on her feet. She's been on her feet so long, the book distribution, like that. Yeah. So that's different kinds of people, different Bhagavatams for different people. That's kind of our perspective on this. Any final questions, comments, complaints then?
No, but we're going to miss your association, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Please come with me. Please give me your blessing. We can have a little success with this. We can come back. Wait, Hanuman Prasad. We'll try and come back with the good news if we find Sita. You know, route there. People
the last time you went traveling, you did send back a report that we were able to share with the devotees. So that would be nice if you can stay in touch every once in a while.
Okay. Maybe I can record a little something. We got a special microphone for recording interviews. My God, packing up here. Okay, so thank everybody very much. I have to war with my cell phone here. I think the operating system got contaminated. Yeah. But thank you all very, very much. Hare Krishna.
Jai, all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.
Buen viaje.
Adios.